Chapter 4. Achieving Your Goals. How to Set and Reach Your Targets. Goals are the fuel in the furnace of achievement. Brian Tracy, author, entrepreneur, and motivational speaker. The first principle for success, Chapter 3, is to set goals and to know what you want. In this chapter, we will cover the importance of setting goals effectively, how to do so in the workplace for both individuals and organizations, and how to apply the principles of goal setting at work. Exercise 4.1, approximately 5 minutes. Set at least one work-related goal. Ideally, have a short-term, medium-term, and long-term goal. For example, your short-term goal might be to pass your next set of professional exams. A medium-term goal might be to become qualified, lawyer, accountant, surveyor, nurse, and a long-term goal would be to start your own business or agency. If you run your own business or are senior enough to set departmental or organizational goals, then set goals for your organization and a work goal for you. We will refer to these later in the chapter. Why set goals? A more relevant question here is, why set goals using the principles outlined in this chapter? This is because most people in the business world are already accustomed to setting goals. Every organization I've heard of will have targets, set budgets, and have strategic plans that are quantified in order to focus the efforts of all the staff on the same organizational goals and against which to monitor and compare progress. Most individuals working in these organizations will have goals, targets, and objectives set at least annually at their performance review and appraisal. Also, from a personal psychological point of view, having a clearly defined goal or target will help your reticular activation system, that is, the brain's internal radar, to focus on finding and selecting relevant information from the millions of available bits of information that will help you achieve your goals. As outlined in the Principles for Success in Chapter 3, once you have a clear goal, you can then start the journey towards achieving it. The additional benefits of setting goals using the NLP principles are as follows. It provides real clarity on what the individual or group wants. It helps ensure that the goals are truly what the individual and organization want. This is particularly relevant for smaller businesses, where the goals are often an extension of or related to the owner's goals. Consequently, this ensures that individuals and businesses don't waste time, effort, and energy in aiming for a goal that would not be appropriate, probably only realizing the goal was not appropriate after many hours of effort and much expense. It is important to make clear that the goal-setting process is separate from actually achieving it. So, for example, if you are a manager coaching a member of staff at her annual appraisal, my suggestion is that you agree on the goal before beginning to coach her on how to achieve it. Chapter 17 touches on the use of NLP when coaching. A sports approach to achieving business goals. Nowhere is goal setting more widely embraced than in the area of sport, and there are some aspects of goal setting that businesses can learn from sport. Within the world of sport, it is generally accepted that there are three types of goals: outcome goals, the why; performance goals, the what; process goals, the how. Outcome goals relate to the big picture, the overall aim, the goal that really motivates and provides the why. Examples in sport could be winning the Olympic gold or, for mere mortals, winning the local tennis or golf tournament. In the workplace, this might relate to, for example, taking your company into the Fortune 500 top companies, having your organization in the top quartile of a specific measure, such as a certain type of healthcare service or employee satisfaction, being the top-performing salesperson this quarter, getting a promotion this year. Though outcome goals are, almost by definition, motivating, they are not always within the control of the person or organization. This is where performance goals are useful. Performance goals relate to the measures that will need to be achieved to give your organization the best chance of success, that is, what needs to be achieved. An athlete could run the race of their life, yet if someone performs better, they won't win the gold. Similarly, a business could produce excellent profits, but if other companies do better, that business might not achieve its outcome goals, using the examples above. Examples of performance goals, relating to the examples used previously, could be produce pre-tax profits of $300 million this year, have staff turnover of 12%, close $1.5 million of business this quarter, have the new computer system go live this year. These performance goals are something tangible to aim for and will be something within your control or that of the organization. And although these goals are what you will be aiming for, they do not identify how you will do it. Process goals relate to the specifics of how you or your organization will achieve the performance goals, which in turn will provide the best chance of achieving the outcome goals. Just as an athlete will have a whole raft of specific tasks and measures, such as doing 100 push-ups daily or working on a specified technical aspect of their sport, so you or your business will have specific process goals, such as create 3 new products or expand into a new geographic area, introduce employee engagement surveys or introduce semi-annual rather than annual appraisals, make a presentation at the annual conference for your industry or make 25 cold calls each day, do the initial user test this month or migrate one subset of the system within 3 months. Tip 4.1. When setting goals, be aware of the distinction between the 3 categories. As a guide, outcome goals tend to be longer term, performance goals are medium term, and process goals are short term. In some situations, the distinction between outcome and performance goals and between performance goals and process goals can be blurred. Therefore, use these 3 categories to inform you, rather than spend too much energy debating which category a goal fits into. NLP approaches to goal setting. Within the field of NLP, there are several models for goal setting, all of which are complementary and lead to the creation of what is known as a well-formed goal or well-formed outcome. In NLP, the terms outcomes and goals are often used interchangeably. A well-formed goal or outcome is one that is formulated in a way that significantly increases the likelihood of the goal being achieved because of the clarity, desirability, and appropriateness of the goal. These goal-setting models usually consist of a series of questions to ask when setting goals and/or a checklist of conditions to be met for goals to be considered well-formed. The benefit of using this approach when setting goals was covered in Why Set Goals. Although these 2 models are extremely useful, particularly for general use by individuals or when they are not totally clear on what they want, in the business world, the use of SMART or SMART objectives or goals is more widely used. The NLP goal-setting models can be adapted into the SMARTER method, an extension of SMART goals. Because of these factors, we will be using the SMARTER method here. Please note that the information that follows will greatly extend the effectiveness of your knowledge of the traditional SMART model. There are 15 points rather than the commonly used 5 or 6, so please approach this with fresh ears. The following explanation of the SMARTER model will be a general description, mainly for individuals, followed by some specifics about how it can be used individually at work or with groups and organizations. Although we will take each point in the SMARTER model separately, as you will see, some of the points relate to each other. With some of the points that follow, I mention useful questions, emphasized, that will help you incorporate that point into the goal or goals you set. In order to make the SMARTER points clear, let's use the following goal as an example. It's October 31st, the year 20-something. Specific date, 18 months in the future, and my advertising business, based in central Paris, which I formed last year, has made $1 million of sales, with a pre-tax profit of $150,000 after $75,000 salary each to me and my business partner, named. We have an order book of $350,000 for the next 10 weeks, and forecast turnover for the following 12 months is $1,500,000, and forecast profit is $400,000. After a $100,000 salary each. I have worked on average 50 hours per week and have a good work-life balance and time for my family, my health and fitness, and my social life. S. Specific. Be specific about what the goal is. Say exactly and specifically what you want. Some of my course delegates say that their goal is to make more money. When I give them one penny, they have achieved their stated goal, yet is it what they actually want? What will you be seeing, hearing, feeling, saying to yourself, and even tasting and smelling when you achieve your goal? The more sensory specific you can be, the more likely it is that you will achieve the goal. In the previous example, you would want to ascertain exactly how you would know that the sales, profit, and salary goal had been achieved, and that the second year's targets were likely to be met. If relevant, you might also want to ask questions such as, where, When, how, and with whom do you want this? In this example, the answers are Central Paris, the specified date, advertising business, and the name of your business partner. Simple. As far as possible, state what you want as simply and briefly as possible. This is not to say that it will be simple to achieve it. Stating it simply gives all those involved the greatest likelihood of understanding it rather than deleting or distorting the information or getting overwhelmed by a rambling description of the goal. Tip 4.2. Ask yourself whether an intelligent and informed child could understand your goal. If so, it is probably specific and simple enough. M. Measurable. This links to specific before. Make sure the goal is measurable, ideally with numbers or amounts indicated. Some of my clients say that their goal is to be more successful. Though this is a nice idea, how would this be measured? How would you know undeniably when you had it? In the example goal, it might be that you would be seeing the annual financial statement or hearing your accountant tell you the financial results. There are also stated amounts of money and a number of hours. Meaningful and motivating. The more meaningful and motivating the goal is to you, the more likely it is that you will do what it takes to achieve it. Does the goal give you more of what you want? That is, your values? Chapter 14. What will this outcome get for you or allow you to do? In this example, having your own business might be a lifetime's ambition, and it might help you to do other things in your life, such as buy the house you want and give you the independence you want. Maintainable by you. It is important that you can make it happen yourself or take steps to make it happen. For example, if you are a manager or owner, managing your staff to make the goal happen. If you are totally reliant on other people, and if you have little direct influence over them, either the goal is less likely to be achieved, or you will need to take this into account when designing and planning the goal and steps to achieve it. More than one way to achieve it. Most goals can be achieved in various ways. It is worth being aware that if there is only one way to achieve it, and for whatever reason that way becomes blocked, then the goal becomes far more difficult to achieve. So it is best to choose a goal where there is more than one way to achieve it. In practice, most goals can be achieved in many ways. Using the example, there is a wide variety of companies that use advertising services and a wide variety of advertising mediums. A. Achievable. It is essential that you believe your goal is achievable. Research has shown that the most motivating goals are those that the person believes that they can achieve, even though it may be a challenge. If you believe that the goal is not achievable, it is unlikely that you will put much effort into trying to achieve it. Two useful questions to ask here are, has someone in a broadly similar situation to you achieved something broadly similar? And, have you ever had or done something like this before? If the answers are yes, it suggests that the goal is achievable. Remember, even if the answers are no, there are frequently groundbreaking achievements in the workplace due to, for example, technological advancements. It is also useful to ask, where are you now in relation to your goal? If you are too far away, perhaps you need to adjust your goal, for example, by adjusting the target date. Tip 4.3. Remember Napoleon Hill's story about having a definite purpose and a burning desire to achieve it? If you really want something, even if it hasn't been achieved before, you're already a long way towards achieving it. All areas of life. Life coaches would say that it is important to set goals in all areas of your life in order to create the sort of balanced life you want. From a business coach's perspective, whether or not I ask clients to do this, I would certainly want all my clients to consider the impact of their work goals on other areas of their life, notably their health, relationships, and finances. To the extent that your goal impacts positively on all areas of your life, or at least that there are no significant negative consequences, you will feel more motivated to take action to achieve the goal than if there were significant negative consequences. Using the example, the goal states the work-life aspects. As if now. According to Napoleon Hill and the many business leaders he interviewed, successful people see their goals as if they were happening now or had already happened. Hill talked about Henry Ford having a picture in his mind of the combustion engine working. Also, many sports champions visualize success already happening before sports events. So when you state and think about your goal, do so as if it were happening now, or has already happened. That is, state it in the present or past tense. R. Realistic. This will often be linked to achievable. There is a subtle difference between the two. Though it might be technically achievable for a 44-year-old who had never earned more than $50,000 to become a chief executive of a blue-chip company before his 45th birthday, it is almost certainly not realistic. Right and responsible. This links to all areas of life stated previously. Is the goal truly right for you? Are there any significant negative consequences for you or for those close to you if you achieve this goal? Does it fit in with your own sense of who you are? Will this goal keep the positive aspects of the current situation? Will achieving this goal open doors for you and make possible for you other things that you want in your work? What will this goal get for you or allow you to do? Story 4.1. Jane was working with a relatively small niche healthcare business whose goal for the previous 3 years was to become the leading company in their industry within 6 months. They had made relatively little progress. When she asked them to name a specific date and work toward that, the whole company had something to focus on, and they achieved as much in 3 months as they had in the previous 3 years. T. Timed and dated. It is essential to specify a date and, if appropriate, a time of day, for example, hearing about exam results for your goals. Within 3 months is not a date and is often not effective because there is no specific target to move toward. October 31st of 20, the stated year, is a date. Toward. Although appearing last on the traditional SMART goal list, this is potentially the most important item. Stating what you want, without any comparisons, such as more or less, as opposed to what you don't want, helps you focus on what you do want. Based on recent developments in quantum physics, there is evidence supporting the assertions and findings of people such as Napoleon Hill that our thoughts manifest into reality. For example, if you think about not wanting to do badly at the interview, the thought in your mind is, do badly at the interview. It is much more effective to think about doing well at the interview. Therefore, state your goals in terms of what you want to be, do, or have. What specifically do you want? Tip 4.4. Say it how you want it to be. E. Ecology. An important topic in NLP is that of ecology. In NLP, ecology relates to the consequences of actions on you and all areas of your life, such as health, money, relationships, family, hobbies, people around you, and society in general. This links to right and responsible and all areas of life. To the extent that your goals are truly right for the three groups just mentioned, you will receive support from, or at least not be obstructed by, people in your life. Though in the short term, people are sometimes willing and able to put up with some negative consequences, such as not spending enough time with family or maintaining fitness, in order to achieve their goals, over the longer term, this is usually not sustainable. Therefore, when setting goals, please bear in mind the consequences. This relates to right and responsible. That is, what you will gain or lose if you achieve this goal. Here are some additional questions to ask when setting goals in order to increase the likelihood of the goals being ecological. These will be referred to as the four ecology questions later in the audiobook. 1. What will happen if you achieve it? 2. What will happen if you don't achieve it? 3. What won't happen if you achieve it? 4. What won't happen if you don't achieve it? This is a brain twister and a very useful question. If any of the answers suggest that there are significant negative consequences or that it is not ecological to achieve this goal, then consider adjusting your goal or discussing it with the people impacted by your goal. Story 4.2. Tom, an engineer, wanted to achieve his ambition of running the Ironman triathlon in Hawaii. The race takes around 10 hours to complete and requires an immense amount of training and preparation. Recognizing that he would have less time for his work, his partner, and his family, that is, negative consequences, Tom had various conversations and negotiated a 4-day week, doing his training with his partner, also a triathlete, and arranged for a big party for friends and family for the week after the race to thank them for their patience and support, even though he would not have seen much of them recently. Tip 4.5. Wherever possible, seek to set win-win outcomes. R. Resources. What resources do you have, and what else will you need in order to achieve the goal? In a business sense, resources relate to things such as money, time, and people. In an NLP context, resources can also relate to more inherent personal attributes such as confidence, experience, determination, ability to focus, and skill levels. Exercise 4.2, approximately 10 to 15 minutes. If you are used to using the standard SMART model, reflect on the similarities and differences between it and the SMARTER model explained previously. Make a list of the additional areas in the SMARTER model that will be useful to you and/or your organization, and include them when setting goals in the future. Examples of SMARTER goals. Here are some other examples of SMARTER goals, including process, performance, and outcome goals. Assuming that all the SMARTER criteria are met, here is how the goals might be worded. It is October 31st, 2015, that is, this year, and I have sold $150,000 in the last 3 months. It is January 1st, 2016, 2 years from now, and I am a qualified accountant. It is May 31st, 2017, 3 years from now, and our organization has won a national award for technical innovation. It is March 31st, 2015, this year, and the payroll department that I run has no queries or errors outstanding for longer than 3 hours. Goal setting for individuals. The goal setting principles just explained can be used in several ways for individuals. For yourself, setting your own career or business goals and targets. When managing or coaching other people around their own career or business goals. If you manage people, you can use this at appraisals or when someone gets promoted into a new role. Goal setting for groups and organizations. You can use these principles with groups, departments, or organizations. For example, when coaching or leading a team to set the direction and targets. Boards of directors or management teams can use these to set longer-term goals as part of a strategic plan. During project meetings, especially at the initial stages, setting the direction and target. If there is a significant change in direction, plans, or circumstances, these principles can help you reset the goals. If you are used to using the standard SMART model, reflect on the similarities and differences between it and the SMARTER model explained previously. Make a list of the additional areas in the SMARTER model that will be useful to you and/or your organization, and include them in your group or organizational goal setting. Tip 4.6. If there is a significant external change in circumstances, such as a new government policy or a major economic or political event, revisit and adjust the goal if appropriate. If a SMARTER goal no longer becomes achievable, then be flexible, Chapter 3, and alter your target. If a pilot plans to land at Paris and there's thick fog there, they'll change course to land at Lyon. Even if your organization is well used to the traditional SMART process and you automatically set goals accordingly, you will be able to improve using SMARTER goals. Exercise 4.3, approximately 20 to 45 minutes. Revisit the goals you set in Exercise 4.1. Apply the SMARTER goal setting process and adjust the goal if appropriate. Consider whether the goal is an outcome, performance, or process goal. If it is a process goal, what would be a relevant performance and outcome goal? Part 2. Verbal and Nonverbal Communication. Part 2 provides you with some skills that form the basis of effective communication, which will help you get the most from the topics in the rest of this audiobook. Chapter 5 describes how to hone your observational skills and build trust and rapport quickly. Chapter 6 looks at how you can alter the way in which you communicate to suit the preferences of listeners. Chapter 7 covers several essential aspects and models of language to help you influence and gain information quickly and effectively. Chapter 5. Building Relationships at Work. How to Get People on Your Side. One of the principles for success is the ability to build and maintain good working relationships with colleagues, customers, and other stakeholders. In NLP, this is called rapport. It is fundamental to all communications and can be defined as a feeling of trust and cooperation between people. In order to be able to build rapport, it is important that we are aware of how other people are responding. In NLP, there is a concept called sensory acuity, in other words, using your senses to watch, listen to, and in some cases, feel the subtle, sometimes extremely subtle, nonverbal signals that people are automatically sending, influenced by how they think and feel, so that you can gain an understanding of how they are feeling and responding at any given moment. This sensory awareness is a prerequisite for rapport, and we will briefly cover it before moving on to rapport. Sensory acuity. Sensory acuity is the second of the principles for success, Chapter 3. It relates to taking feedback about how a conversation or communication is going and can help you communicate even more effectively in the workplace. To illustrate this, we need to go back in time briefly. In the introduction, I mentioned that NLP was initially developed in the 1970s by John Grinder and Richard Bandler, modeling excellent communicators. One of these excellent communicators was the eminent doctor and hypnotherapist Milton Erickson. Erickson has such exquisite sensory acuity that, so the story goes, he was able to tell that a patient was going into a trance because he could see the pulse in their ankles slowing down. You may be wondering at this point, what has hypnosis got to do with business? Put simply, hypnotherapists are in the business of influencing via their nonverbal and verbal communication. In the workplace, everyone wants to influence other people, whether it be salespeople influencing customers to explain their needs so that they can better serve the customer and, hopefully, sell to them. Managers influencing staff to perform better. Staff influencing managers for a pay raise or promotion. Doctors influencing patients to take their medication. Teachers and trainers influencing students and course delegates to learn. If you can use your sensory acuity to assess how people are feeling at any given moment, that is, their state, as referred to in the communication model in Chapter 2, you are more likely to be able to proceed at the right speed and influence them, just as a hypnotherapist is better able to proceed at the right speed to induce a trance in a client who wants to stop smoking. Using some of the previous workplace examples, is the customer ready to make a decision to buy, or do they need more information? Have the course delegates understood, or do they need more explanation? Overall, sensory acuity helps you gain a greater understanding of how someone is feeling at any given moment, and hence, helps you choose how and what to communicate. Some principles of sensory acuity. Almost every person uses their sensory acuity automatically. Most people will know if their spouse, friends, or close work colleagues are in a particularly good or bad mood simply by looking at them when they walk into the room or from hearing them say hello. The way people do this is by comparing how someone appears now to how they normally do, or by recognizing certain subtle nonverbal signals the person is currently exhibiting and comparing this occasion with the previous times they displayed these signals. This is known in NLP as calibrating. What to pay attention to. Without necessarily realizing it, you will have been noticing some or all of the following nonverbal signals when recognizing how people you know are feeling. For example, breathing patterns, fast or slow, chest or abdomen. Pupil size, dilated or constricted. Eye focus, fullness of the lower lip. Skin color change, blushing for example. Clusters of gestures, such as hand movements, foot tapping, body posture. Voice tonality, volume, pitch, speed, intonation. Facial muscle and eye movements. You can use sensory acuity with people whom you do not know well. For example, when meeting a new supplier and casually chatting before the meeting starts, pay attention to the nonverbal signals when they talk about, for example, the holiday they liked, the frustration they felt in a traffic jam, and other examples that link to their feeling in a particular way. You will be able to use this to recognize if they are feeling these states later in the conversation. Caveats. It is important to realize that people are different from each other, and the signals that one person sends when feeling, for example, confused, may be the same as someone else feeling, for example, curious. Remember also that some people are more demonstrative than others, and be wary of labeling someone's responses purely by one aspect of their body language. Story 5.1. When teaching sensory acuity in training courses, I ask people, what does someone having folded arms mean? The typical reply is, they're defensive or angry. Though this may be the case, I point out that the person may be cold. They may be comfortable with her arms folded. She may have a stain on her shirt, or she may be perspiring more than usual and not want you to see it. Please use common sense here. If someone is shouting in an abusive way, the signs about how they are feeling are evident. In his best-selling book, What Every Body Is Saying, the author and former FBI investigator Joe Navarro, whose job included identifying when people were lying, emphasizes that each person is different, and though there may be certain signs that strongly indicate how someone is feeling, he would look for patterns. For example, people demonstrating the same response in more than one situation. So, using the arm-folding example in Story 5.1, if someone folded their arms and then displayed angry behavior, be wary of the next time they folded their arms. Tip 5.1. Though sensory acuity alone would rarely be sufficient to identify whether a client, interviewee, or colleague is not being truthful, using your sensory acuity could indicate when it might be useful to probe for more information. Applications of sensory acuity at work. Here are some examples of how you could use sensory acuity in the workplace. Sales. Identifying whether the client is ready to agree to buy or needs further information before deciding. Gaining credibility by being able to ask probing questions if the customer shows signs of uncertainty. Story 5.2. One of my new students, Peter, had a meeting with a chief executive officer, CEO, and his human resources director, HRD. The CEO was a very domineering character. At one point, he said to the HRD, "I know you're happy with the level of staff engagement, aren't you?" And she replied, "Yes." But Peter had seen her agree with statements made previously. That is, he had calibrated her yes signals, and this was not a true yes. After the CEO left, Peter asked her about his question. Initially, she was taken aback that he had spotted it, but she then confided that she was having difficulties with the CEO and the area of staff engagement. Peter was able to work with her to begin to address this. Other examples of how you could use sensory acuity in the workplace. Appraisals. Is the member of staff in agreement with your comments? Calibrating how committed the employee is to achieving the goals. How truthful is your boss being about why you did not get promoted? Interviews. Is the interviewee exaggerating their experience? Calibrating whether the example you are using to demonstrate your experience is sufficient for the interviewer. Presentations and meetings. Calibrating whether your message is going down well or whether you need to adjust your approach. Your sensory acuity skills are the foundation of the next topic. Build rapport. Rapport. Rapport is the feeling of trust and cooperation between two or more people, so that they will become more receptive to what you are saying to them. It is an essential part of building good working relationships. Bandler and Grinder noticed that Erickson, as well as having excellent sensory acuity, was able to build a deep-level rapport as a way of influencing his clients to go into a trance. Why is rapport so useful? Rapport is one of the principles for success, Chapter 3, and is fundamental to all effective communication in the workplace. You will be far more likely to be positively influenced by someone you trust and feel comfortable with than by someone you don't. Equally, you will be much better able to influence customers and colleagues if they trust you and feel comfortable with you. Here are some specific examples of how rapport will help you at work. Selling, whether in the traditional sense of products and services, or selling ideas to colleagues, suppliers, patients, and students. Being selected at interviews. Negotiating more effectively, including if the negotiations become tense. Coaching, because at times a coach will need to really challenge a client. Presenting ideas to groups, for example, meetings, presentations. Handling conflicts and challenging conversations. Many people I speak to have been taught about building rapport during various management and influencing skill courses. This indicates how useful this topic is in the workplace. Some principles underpinning rapport. There are some key principles underpinning rapport. Firstly, rapport is about influencing people appropriately, not manipulating them to do something they do not want to do. Even if the latter were possible, most businesses espouse ethical business practices, creating customer loyalty, reputation, and relationships, and generally creating win-win scenarios. Another principle relates to the notion that people tend to like people who are like them to some degree. See Chapter 36 in Leigh Thompson's The Truth About Negotiations. The third principle is that most communication is nonverbal. Research by Mehrabian, Birdwhistle, and others suggests that words make up only 7% of communication, with voice tonality making up 38% and body language 55%. Most of our conscious attention in a conversation is taken up by listening to the words, so up to 93% of a communication may be outside our conscious awareness. Even if these numbers are not totally correct, we know they have some validity. If you imagine a client saying how pleased they are to see you, but in a monotonous voice, with slouched posture, and looking away from you, you would probably think that they weren't so pleased. Research into mirror neurons and mother-child communication has shown that when there is rapport between two people, there is a form of unconscious communication, where both parties naturally feel comfortable. Finally, rapport is something that almost everyone experiences automatically with people they like and feel comfortable with. Observe people at a business networking event or at a conference, and you will see people engrossed in a conversation demonstrating the signs of rapport that we will discuss in the following section. How to build rapport. Given that most communication is nonverbal and that people who are in some way like each other tend to like each other, if you can demonstrate nonverbally that you are like your work contacts, they will probably like you or at least feel comfortable with you. The way to do this is by matching and/or mirroring elements of the other person or person's physiology, voice tonality, or words. Matching and mirroring are similar to each other, the difference being that, in terms of physiology, if your colleague has their right hand on their chin, you would be matching them if you are facing them with your right hand on your chin, and mirroring them if you had your left hand on your chin. It is generally considered by NLP practitioners that mirroring is more effective than matching, although I am unaware of any definitive evidence. If you can also match one person's physiology with a different part of your own, for example, if they are tapping their foot, you could tap your finger at the same speed, known as crossover matching. I will use the term matching from now onward to cover all three types. Here are key things you can match. Physiology, 55%. Posture, such as hand on chin, leaning forward, back, or to the side. Gestures. Please do this only when it is your turn to talk. Breathing patterns, such as speed and location, for example, chest or stomach. Facial expressions. Amount of eye contact. Though this is not traditionally covered in NLP courses, it is nonetheless implicit in building rapport. Style of dress. Again, this is not a specific NLP point, although in a business context it is usually important to dress in keeping with the culture. Voice, 38%. Speed of speaking. Volume of speaking. Tone, high or low pitch and intonation. Timbre, the quality or resonance of the voice. Words, 7%. Amount of detail. Lots of detail, just the overview, or a combination. Generally, the more senior or experienced in a role someone is, the less they will require detail. Common experiences, for example, hobbies, holiday locations, children. Keywords and phrases that they use or that are used in their industry or profession. Predicates. These are words denoting whether the person is thinking in pictures, sounds, or feelings. For example, if someone says, "From my point of view," this indicates they are thinking in pictures, view. If they say, "That idea resonates with me," they are probably thinking in sounds, resonate. This topic is covered in detail in Chapter 6. More specifically, you would pace the person by matching one or two aspects of the previous list until you felt there was some rapport, and then, if appropriate, you would lead them toward where you wanted them to be. You may hear people who have studied NLP refer to building rapport as pacing and leading. See Indicators of Rapport for more on this. It is important to remember to use common sense and that a little goes a long way. Please do not match every single movement, because it will be very obvious and the other person will probably become uncomfortable. It is more effective to pick one or two elements, and do it subtly, out of the other person's conscious awareness. If someone you are seeking to build rapport with happens to use exaggerated gestures or postures, you could match this to some degree. If matching it to the same degree would feel too unnatural or inappropriate, a little goes a long way. Indicators of rapport. How would you know you were in rapport? You might observe slight skin color changes in the other person, using your sensory acuity skills, and/or you might feel really comfortable with them, even feeling as if you've met them before or known them for a while. You might also casually touch, for example, your cheek, and if they automatically touch theirs, this indicates that you have led them because you are in rapport. Other ways of pacing and leading include initially altering your voice speed or volume toward the other person's level, pacing, and then, once you feel you're in rapport, you would lead them to a voice speed or volume that felt more comfortable. For example, if your client naturally speaks very quickly, and you naturally speak more slowly, you could increase your speed for a little while until you felt there was some rapport, and then let it slow down somewhat to a level that you both feel comfortable with. Exercise 5.1. Pay attention to people in meetings or at business networking events. Notice how they naturally match each other when they are engrossed in conversation, and how they mismatch when they are not enjoying the conversation and want to leave or move on to the next person. Applications at work, pacing, and leading individuals. By now you will have realized that building rapport is so important that it underpins every working relationship, ranging from colleagues, suppliers, clients and customers, patients, students, and at meetings such as appraisals, interviews, and presentations. The principles of pacing and leading can be applied more generally rather than simply matching body language, voice, and words. For example, if you want to persuade a colleague about an idea you have been working on, as well as building rapport as outlined previously, you could pace their current level of knowledge by explaining it to them in ways that you know they would understand and gradually take them to the level of understanding that you have built up. Equally, if you know that they are the type of person who wants the information quickly, avoid wasting time with explanation unless they request it. Breaking rapport can occasionally be useful too. For example, beginning to gather your papers signals that you would like the meeting to end. Or, as a salesman, leaving the client some time to reflect before actually committing to buy while you request to make a phone call or go to the restroom. This can be useful where there is a cooling-off period, for example, on certain personal finance contracts. It is possible that you might have built such a high degree of rapport that the client will buy from you, only to reflect and cancel due to buyer's remorse. It is far better to gently and briefly break rapport by, for example, going to the restroom, in order to give the client time to reflect alone before signing the forms. Applications at work, pacing, and leading groups. You can build rapport with groups as well as with individuals. Here are some examples. When doing a presentation to a group, at or near the start, you can ask for a show of hands on both sides of a particular topic and raise your hand as you ask it. For example, I will often ask, "Who has heard me speaking before?" followed by, "And who is seeing me for the first time?" By doing this, you are in rapport with the group because almost all, if not all, of the audience will have raised their hand to match or mirror yours. Another question I have found to be useful is, "Raise your hand if you'd like to finish a little early today." I rarely need to ask the opposite question. If you are at a meeting or doing a presentation where you know there will be some resistance to people being there, for example, a compulsory meeting at 4 p.m. on a Friday before a holiday weekend, rather than being really energetic from the start, you could indicate that you are aware of how they are feeling and pace it before leading. For example, you can say, "I know it's 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon before a long weekend, and I guess some of you may not be looking forward to this meeting." Pause and look for signs of agreement. "So here's what I suggest. Let's be really focused on getting the meeting done as quickly and productively as possible so that we can all go home and enjoy the weekend." Please reflect before you do this to be as sure as you can that your assumption is correct. If they were looking forward to the meeting, you would have inadvertently planted negative thoughts in their minds. If you are at a meeting with a group of prospective clients or at a panel interview, you will find that there will be some common postures. For example, some might have their legs crossed, others their hand on their chin, others leaning forward, others leaning back. Pick a leg-related posture and arm-related posture that match as many people as possible. When you feel that you have built rapport with those people, probably after a minute or two, subtly change so that you are matching the others that you have not matched, and keep doing this so that you are in rapport with everyone for large portions of the meeting. If there happens to be someone who appears most influential, not necessarily the most senior, concentrate on maintaining rapport with that person throughout, in addition to periodically switching to build rapport with everyone else. Breaking rapport with a group might be useful. As a manager, you can leave the room during a team meeting, leaving your team to make some decisions that they will be responsible for implementing before returning to the room. Chapter 6. Communicating in everyone's language. Altering your style to suit the listener. If you talk to a man in a language he understands, that goes to his head. If you talk to him in his language, that goes to his heart. Nelson Mandela. In English, as in many other languages, there are four main preferences that influence the type of language that a person will use. Knowing about this will help you to put your point across in such a way that everyone will grasp what you are saying, and therefore see what you mean, because you will be communicating in the way they automatically process information, even if they are not consciously aware of it. Why is this so useful? There are several reasons why this material is so useful at work, both for individuals and groups. You will be able to improve your communication when selling, presenting, managing, advertising, and negotiating, because you will be able to communicate in the way other people think and want to receive information. This helps to avoid situations where you say the same thing to different people and get very different responses. Improve your capabilities where they are linked to senses, such as listening skills, creativity, and creative problem solving. Coach others in the previous areas. Build rapport using words. Before we expand on this, we need to cover some fundamentals. How we gather and process information. As you remember from the communication model, Chapter 2, we receive external information using our five senses and process the information internally using the same five senses. Additionally, we have an internal dialogue about this information, that is, putting words to it. These senses are known as representational systems, that is, how we represent or re-present to ourselves information. Our representational systems are see, visual, hear, auditory, feel, kinesthetic, smell, olfactory, taste, gustatory. In addition to these five senses, there is an internal dialogue about events. This internal dialogue, or self-talk, is known as auditory digital. For example, you may have just been promoted and become entitled to a company car. When you go into the showroom, you might see, visual, a particular car, and you might say to yourself, auditory digital, that's the one I want. Though each of us uses all of the representational systems to some degree, many people have one or two senses that they prefer to use, known as their preferred or primary representational system. We will cover preferred systems in the next section. Generally, in Western culture, the olfactory and gustatory systems, though important for survival, are not as important as they are for people living a more subsistence type of lifestyle. So, the other three senses, together with auditory digital, are more dominant. Let's look at these four main representational systems. Visual. This consists of external images, creating images, and visualizing in our mind, as well as remembering pictures and images you have seen. Auditory. This consists of external sounds, creating sounds in our mind, and remembering sounds, music, or words you have heard. Kinesthetic. This is made up of external touch, internal sensations and emotions, as well as bodily awareness. Auditory digital. This is your internal dialogue and assessment about a topic. Preferred representational systems. In the field of NLP, it is generally thought that approximately 35 to 40% of people prefer the visual system, 20 to 25% prefer the auditory or auditory digital system, 40% of people prefer the kinesthetic system. This is important to know because, as a generalization, you tend to communicate according to your preferences, which can be effective provided you are communicating with people who have a similar preference, and not so effective if they have a different preference from you. Certain professions may have a stronger bias toward a specific system because of the inherent nature of the work. Architects and designers tend to prefer the visual system. Musicians and telesalespeople tend to prefer the auditory system. Computer engineers, doing repairs, and physiotherapists tend to prefer the kinesthetic system. Accountants, lawyers, and business analysts tend to prefer the auditory digital system. Exercise 6.1, approximately 10 minutes. Please complete the Preferred Representational System questionnaire available in the companion PDF to this audiobook. This will indicate your preferred system. Tip 6.1. Please note that the percentages and the results from exercise 6.1 are indications, and preference does not necessarily equate to competence. For example, if your least preferred system is auditory, it does not mean that you are a bad listener. Recognizing preferred representational systems. Here are some indications of how to recognize preferred representational systems in the workplace, and hence how people will tend to behave. This section has some generalizations that may not be true for every single person. Visual, that is, they prefer to think in pictures and diagrams. Speak fast, they think in pictures and a picture paints 1,000 words, and gesticulate quickly. Use visual language, such as see, look, appear, focus, paint a picture, mental image, clear, in view of, hazy, show, look forward to, illuminate, visualize, imagine, review, I see your point, short-sighted, take a dim view of. Have hobbies and do work that involves seeing things, such as art, watching films or photography, or they like the visual aspect of their pastimes, such as looking at scenery while walking in the country. Remember things better when they have seen them, and especially like diagrams, flowcharts, and pictures. Learn by seeing, such as by looking at diagrams, videos, flowcharts, and pictures. Like things to be neat and tidy. The way something or someone looks is important. Auditory. That is, they prefer to communicate using words. Speak at a medium pace, often in a rhythmic or melodious way. Use auditory language, such as hear, sound, listen, speak, discuss, converse, tune in or tune out, resonate, I'm all ears, voice an opinion, ask, tell, announce, rings a bell, music to my ears, loud and clear, the same wavelength, harmonize. Have hobbies and do work that involves hearing or words, such as reciting poetry, listening to music, speaking to their friends on the phone, or they like the auditory aspect of their pastimes, such as hearing the sounds of nature when walking in the country. Remember things better when they have discussed or heard them. Learn by hearing, by listening to audio material or hearing explanations. Auditory digital, that is, they prefer to think in ideas and to analyze. Want to understand how ideas work? Are interested in ideas that make sense and are logical. Use language that is not sensory specific, such as conceive, evaluate, assess, think, understand, know, learn, process, decide, consider, change, make sense, logical process, modify our thinking, change of mind. The rationale is, need facts, figures, and evidence? Can exhibit the characteristics of any of the three other main systems. Kinesthetic, that is, they prefer to feel and experience things. Speak at a slow pace. Use kinesthetic language such as solid, grasp, connect, concrete, make contact, kick some ideas around, hard, soft, rough, smooth the way for something, get hold of, get in touch with, catch on to, touch base with, get a handle on, lay our cards on the table, pull some strings. Have hobbies and do work that involves touching or emotions, such as physiotherapy, pottery, or sports, or they like the kinesthetic aspect of their pastimes, such as feeling the fresh air when walking in the country. Walking is a kinesthetic activity anyway. Remember things better when they have experienced them. Learn best by doing, by putting into practice and experimenting with what they have been taught. By being able to recognize someone's preference, you will be more likely to be able to present information in a way that they like to receive it, and you'll also be better to influence them. Using representational systems at work. For yourself. Because most people communicate according to their own sensory preferences, enhancing the ease with which you can use any of the four main representational systems will help you become more flexible in communicating with people, regardless of their sensory preferences. This fluency, in addition to being able to recognize other people's preferred system, will help you communicate and build rapport, regardless of the work you do. Tip 6.2. You can enhance your ability to access and use your less favored representational system, or systems, by way of relevant practice. Here are some examples. Visual. Memorize work-related diagrams, gradually increasing the complexity, or even do spot-the-difference puzzles. Auditory. Listen to the radio or audio learning material. Kinesthetic. Check how you feel about work-related issues, or, if appropriate, walk through a process step by step. Auditory digital. Think about the logical reasons and, or, seek appropriate facts and figures about a work-related topic. With other individuals and groups. When presenting information to a specific individual at work, such as a customer, staff member, supplier, or trainee, where possible, seek to identify their preferred system and then present information accordingly by focusing the presentation style as follows. Pictures and diagrams, visual. Make them neat. Discussion, auditory. Involve the person in some way, for example, by letting them try out your new product, kinesthetic. Facts and figures, auditory digital. Please remember to use a combination of the four systems, because even if the person has a preference for one system, this does not mean that they will not use others to some degree. Story 6.1. One of my colleagues used to be an educational sales representative, with around 200 head teachers and college principals in her sales area. After she completed her NLP practitioner course, she made a note of the preferred representational system of each of her sales contacts, using the information shown in Recognizing Preferred Representational Systems. For those with a visual preference, she wanted to see them face-to-face, making sure that she was always neatly dressed and that she gave them glossy brochures or showed them products. For those with an auditory preference, she would phone them for a chat, and whenever she saw them, she made sure that she had time to chat with them about products. For those with a kinesthetic preference, she would take them cakes or make sure that she could have a sandwich with them. Eating cakes and sandwiches is a kinesthetic as well as gustatory activity, and she would give them the chance to try out the products. For those with an auditory digital preference, she would make sure that she knew the relevant facts, figures, and scientific studies. Within 6 months, she had significantly improved her sales performance. Exercise 6.2. Following on from Story 6.1, identify the one or two preferred representational systems of important work colleagues and clients, and present information to them accordingly. Following on from an earlier point, use a combination of all four presentational methods when presenting information to groups. This will help engage the whole audience in the topic. The same principles can be used when presenting ideas by way of email or reports. When making formal presentations or running training courses, consider using neat and colorful flip charts instead of, or in addition to, PowerPoint slides. The flip charts can be put on the wall to create a visual reminder throughout the course, as opposed to a PowerPoint slide that disappears as you move on to the next slide. Tip 6.3. If you manage a team, ask them all to complete the representational system preference questionnaire in the companion PDF, and then discuss the results and how it reflects their individual preferences for receiving information. Another use of representational systems is the area of consultancy and problem solving. This is best illustrated by the following example. Story 6.2. An ex-colleague told me how he used the principles of representational systems to help a client make more progress in 2 hours than a major consultancy firm was able to do in several weeks. He and I spoke at an NLP conference, and we decided to demonstrate how the process worked. There were 13 attendees, none of whom had met each other before. One was a manager of a steel factory that had some production problems. No one else knew anything about steel production. Under the guidance of the factory manager, the other 12 delegates laid out pieces of paper on the floor to represent the different departments and areas involved in the process. This provided a visual image of the situation. There were various discussions about the current and desired situation, including relevant facts, which allowed for auditory and auditory digital processing. A small object was used to represent the movement of steel through the factory, and delegates were encouraged to move the object and write notes if they wanted to. This was the kinesthetic element. Within the 45 minutes allotted, the factory manager said that he had at least 2 excellent ideas directly as a result of this consultancy project from complete novices. Sensory-based language. Talk to people in their own language. If you do it well, they'll say, "God, he said exactly what I was thinking." And when they begin to respect you, they'll follow you to the death. Lee Iacocca, former president at Ford Motor Company and Chrysler. We can extend the use of representational systems to the area of language. As we covered in Chapter 2, language is the way that we turn our thoughts into words. Given that we think in pictures, sounds, feelings, and self-talk, it is not surprising that our words reflect this. Earlier in the chapter, we looked at how to recognize someone's preferred representational system. One of the indicators was the words they use. For example, someone thinking visually will use words and phrases such as look, see, watch, paint a picture, focus, and point of view. By being able to tune into what people are saying, you will be able to quickly pick up and understand how they are thinking. In NLP, words and phrases indicating which representational system someone is using are called predicates. Why are predicates so useful? Being able to use appropriate predicates is one of the ways you can use words to build rapport. This is because it helps you to communicate in a way that is being used to process at that moment by your client, colleague, interviewer, and so on. Linked to this, given that we think using our senses, using sensory-based words will engage people at work more than using more neutral words. This is particularly useful for advertising, as many adverts seek to activate our senses. For example, newspaper adverts often use glossy images, and radio adverts use catchy jingles. Using predicates. Under the section, Recognizing Preferred Representational Systems, from the companion PDF, I listed several predicates for each of the 4 systems. These are examples, and not an exhaustive list. Unless you are writing to someone whose representational system preference you know, and where you know that only that person will be reading the information, I suggest that you use a combination of predicates appropriately when writing emails, sales letters, advertising copy, and reports. Even if reports are very factual, using predicates will engage the reader. When making presentations, and the other examples covered under Using Representational Systems at Work.